Hello and welcome to the Burstwall Scottish Football Podcast as we look back at week 4 of the Scottish Premiership. I'm Matt Finlay, taking over from Hamish today, and I'm joined by the ever-present Callum Fisher.
Nice to be on, Matt. Disappointing weekend for me football-wise, but always good to chew the fat, if you like, and even better with a change-up in the host seat this week.
Yeah, no, it's not often you come on after a difficult Rangers week, but that's nice. You're the ever-present, Callum Fisher, as I've said. So it's good, your commitment is strong here. And a returning Andrew Gamba. Gamba, I've not seen you in a while, but good to see you and good to have you back on.
Yeah, it's good. It's good to see you, Matt. I mean, Celtic are probably never going to play a game of football again, so, you know, it's easy for me to come on if they're not losing games if they can't play. So, you know, happy to be here.
We'll get stuck in. Again, like I said, week 4. I think this is week 4. There's some teams who played 2 games. Doesn't really matter. But, lads, where would you just like to start? I'll open it.
I'll give Gamba the floor, given he's been on slightly less than me recently.
Can we start with Kilmarnock St Johnstone? Because I think the scenes, I think it's probably the scenesiest game of the weekend, I would say. So I think we need to kind of start there.
Well, Gamba, you love scenes, as we know. So yeah, absolutely. We get right to it. Kelly was going all right for them, down to 10 men, and then they just chuck it away. A bad day for defending in this game. Gamba, why would you like to start with this game?
Mainly just for the carnage at the end of it, and also that I'd like to apologise for anyone that listened to our big pre-season preview, when I was clearly persuaded and bought into Callum Scott's propaganda. I believe the phrase "we could get relegated" was used after this game, which I think is probably a step too far from him. But I mean, it's a cracking hit and run job, I think, by St Johnstone. They kind of did exactly what they needed to do in this game. They could have been absolutely clamped in that first half if it wasn't for Parrish, you know, deservedly man of the match in that game. Could have been about 4 or 5 in the first half. I mean, the amount of point blank, and especially the save from the free kick, he's done really, really well. I know they concede their goal in the second half, but there's nothing he can do about that. And I suppose for St Johnstone, it was kind of keeping the squad out. And then obviously the Millen red cards does kind of change the flow of the game, definitely in kind of St Johnstone's favour. They've got that extra man, they can go for it a wee bit. I'm saying they can go for it a wee bit. They didn't particularly need to go for it for the second goal they got. It was kind of presented to them on a platter, which wasn't particularly great from a commander point of view, but it is, you know, it is good awareness from, you know, Halloran to get there and actually get the ball rather than just kind of going like, okay, we're under the cosh early in the game, we'll take the point. It's like, no, we'll put pressure on them and we'll get it. I think a lot of credit needs to go to St Johnstone here, as much as probably through the prism of Callum Scott we'll look at this game from a Kelly point of view. It's a cracking 3 points for St Johnstone.
Definitely, especially after the week they had previously. I mean, they were expected to play Aberdeen before, and then went to Ibrox and took a bit of a doing. Fisher, you were kind of not critical of St Johnstone, but you kind of said that they weren't really living up to much, just based on what you'd obviously seen in the first couple of weeks, and especially that Rangers game. But as Gamba says, a cracking result regardless of how you win it.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think for me, St Johnstone, and I'll still stick by this, even though they've won at the weekend, I still don't think St Johnstone are going to have the greatest season. I think hit and run is the best way to describe it. I mean, Killie were by far and away the better team in the first half. Could have had an early penalty for Liam Gordon's challenge on Burke. Decent chance for Kabamba as well. And then, just as Gamba said, it was essentially Parrish versus Kilmarnock for the first, you know, 60 minutes of the game. And even you even get Broadfoot hitting the crossbar. I still think St Johnstone will struggle. I don't think they have enough quality in their team to consistently win week to week, which is obviously difficult for most teams out with kind of Rangers and Celtic in the top flight. But I just think Kelly shot themselves in the foot so badly. They were really comfortable until obviously Millen's red card. Gamba touched on the defending for the winner.
Yikes.
With O'Halloran's O'Halloran's winner. But the defending for the equaliser for Witherspoon's goal as well. I mean, Aaron McGowan in particular, I think he's just been subbed on, and he probably would have been more effective if he'd just kind of stood and did nothing, but he seems to kind of just melt away into the ground. And yeah, I think once the equaliser came, you can maybe see where it was going. And I think it's just very frustrating, and I know we've kind of alluded to Casey's comments in the chat last night, but I think what he did say as well was the fact that, you know, Killie are playing well, they're just not getting the results, and I think that's true. I still think Kilmarnock will be okay. I think they've got enough quality on the side, and they've shown over the past 2 weeks, obviously, if you take out the ever-important last kind of 15 minutes of the game on Saturday, that they are still a very good side. Yeah, and I think they will be okay, but just an absolute disaster in the last period of the game there. And it was also the game that humped my Kooten. So I'm not particularly impressed with Kilmarnock this week, I have to say.
Yeah, obviously frustrating. I mean, we'll come on to... throughout the podcast, I'm sure we'll mention the kind of topic of it being maybe too early to judge teams. Although, you know, there's a case for that on every game. Kilmarnock especially, if we look at it just now, they've not really built on that that draw against Celtic, have they, in a few weeks back. And it's difficult because, as you know, Casey's obviously kind of maybe saying it in jest a little bit, but, you know, Kilmarnock set a bar a couple of seasons ago that they've obviously not being able to kind of follow up in the last 18 months, say. Is that particularly worrying at the moment, Gamba? Or is that kind of something that you look at and you go, no, this is kind of quite early for Killie to be getting judged?
It's a weird one because obviously there was... It's an interesting one. I remember Cal and I talking about it on the podcast a while ago when we said, has Steve Clarke worked wonders with Killie and... with a kind of crap squad and then left, or has he actually laid a decent foundation? I think we'll probably find out soon enough. I do think it's a wee bit maybe too early to kind of find out fully, but the thing I think about the results is it's obviously a very good point against Celtic that they got. They defended very well in that game and they limited Celtic to very few chances. It's a good point to pick up. They will probably be, I reckon, no Kilmarnock fan will be happy that they lost to Hibs, but I don't think that would be an unexpected result. Drawn away to Ross County, don't know whether that's to be expected or not, but losing home to St Johnstone, it's a strange one because...
Start of the season well, though.
Aye, it is an interesting one because I know we were talking about that there are a few games and... Again, it's one of those if my auntie had boys, she'd be my uncle kind of thing. But I mean, if they get a point in that game, it's not the worst start to the season. If they get maybe a win against Ross County, it's not the worst start to the season. It's very fine margins. It's very few games, so I think it's a wee bit too early to kind of be panicking and things like that for Killie this season. There's still plenty of time to kind of get things turned around. And as we said, it's only Ibrox next. You know, they'll be fine. I'm sure.
Yeah, and just the. Any complaints on the red card? Alex Dyer didn't really seem to have any, but was a bit late. It was the heavy touch, I think, didn't it? That kind of and it's ultimately changed the game for Kilmarnock, as we kind of touched on there. Yeah,
yeah. I think it reminded me of there was an incident at Fir Park a few seasons back when Rangers went there and Miller kind of overplayed the ball. Miller overplayed the ball and kind of Scott McDonald went in with 2 feet and gets sent off. It's kind of similar one. It's unfortunate on the player that's getting sent off, but at the end of the day, I mean, he's gone in high. He's obviously not meant it, but it is reckless and it's kind of hard to argue with. And as you said, Alex Dyer didn't seem to have too much of a problem with it. He did think, though, that they should have had a penalty in the first half, which is the one with Burke and Liam Gordon, which I alluded to, which I think he had a point with as well. But nah, no complaints, I think, with that red card.
I think if it's not given, you're very easily saying that's probably a red. It's in that kind of area.
Yeah, it's one of those, isn't it? That obviously, you take that risk when you've left the ball trail and you're getting away from you. We see it quite a lot, and sometimes it goes against it. It was, you know, 10 years ago, it's probably not a red. But difficult one, obviously, for Millen, who's now out suspended. So we'll move on from the scenesiest game to... maybe one of the least scenesiest games. I'll pick this one just now. Motherwell versus Hibs. Now, this is a game I thought that had a lot about going for it. I think, obviously, being on the Sky. The Sky games haven't been great yet, have they? we're looking at this one. You're looking at Hibs, though, going into it, obviously. Perfect start to the season. I personally wasn't that impressed by Hibs. I thought Motherwell were the better team. From I think I saw 70 minutes of it. Wasn't a great game, but Fisher, your thoughts on this one, and maybe a chance missed for Hibs.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, Hibs would have been looking at that with Motherwell. Don't get me wrong, I think we talked in the pod last week that Motherwell appeared to kind of be picking up their performances a wee bit, albeit not getting the desired results. But Hibs would have been looking at home. Obviously, as we mentioned, Celtic not playing this weekend, Rangers not playing till the Sunday, and away at Livingston, they'd have been looking at that thinking, well, obviously there's a chance that Rangers may drop points and that we can maybe put a wee bit of a gap at the top of the table, albeit, as I say, with games in hand. But I just didn't think it was a bit of an end-to-end game, and I think as a neutral, from what I saw, it was okay. Marciano's made a good save from Lang early on. Carson's kind of returned the favour at the other end with Kevin Nisbet as well, but I thought Motherwell in the first half particularly looked a lot better, and that I don't know obviously what Motherwell fans would think from their perspective, but that was certainly the best that I've seen them so far this season. Hibs did come into it a bit more in the second, but as I mentioned, you're probably a wee bit disappointed from Hibs' point of view, just because, as I say, that they have been really good so far, and that would have been one that they would have liked to have obviously again kept up this run. And obviously I think Christian Deutsch had a fairly poor day, and when that happens and Nisbet isn't scoring on the day either, then you know you're kind of wondering where the goals are going to come from. But better for Motherwell, and I think that it's maybe a kind of a good foundation for them to sort of bounce back, because they have been pretty poor in the opening weeks. But it was a decent game, but certainly you would have expected more from it, I think, coming into it.
Yeah, Gamba, just on Motherwell, Stephen Robinson was quite scathing of his team last week. So brought in Stephen O'Donnell, who came in from the start. We'll start on that, just on that, a good bit of business, and then just laterally talking about the game from a Motherwell point of view. They obviously could have won it, but that's probably a good reaction he's got out of his players, isn't it?
Yeah, considering the start Hibs have had, getting a point at Easter Road, I don't think it's the worst. As Callum was saying there, I think Motherwell were by far and away the better team in the game. They probably should have won it. They're unlucky with the goal, but I do think it was right to be ruled out. I know Robinson wasn't particularly happy, and he was saying if we had VAR up here we would get that goal. I don't think if we had VAR up here you would get that goal. But they were unlucky. I thought they were much better than Hibs, and maybe it's throwing a few wee questions at Hibs in terms of the start that they've had. And maybe just reminds them that, like, you know, things aren't maybe going to be as easy as they've been in the other games this season. O'Donnell's a very interesting one. Like, a very, very interesting one, I think. I know a lot of people have been kind of talking about this. It's a very good signing on Motherwell's point of view, but I'm not entirely sure it's maybe where he thought he would be now.
Yeah. Yeah, because obviously he was looking at England, and he told Kilmarnock before that he was going to be leaving, and well, COVID hit, so it's a difficult one for players, isn't it? Because you've seen it in right across all leagues. There's a lot of players obviously being released and not really knowing where they're going. Obviously, they can't really make a commitment. It's not as if you could have done a U-turn on Kilmarnock, because well, he told them no before, so. even you see Ryan Fraser down at Bournemouth, you know, he can effectively rule himself out of helping Bournemouth try to stay in the league by declaring that he wasn't obviously going to be signing in on. Difficult one for O'Donnell to come into, but I'm sure I thought he looked okay. He popped up at a goal, but he'll be hoping. I mean, it's only 6 months. I think it's only till January the contract, so. He'll be looking at maybe extending to the end of the season just for that, or you know, hoping to get himself back in, because he's also got games for Scotland coming up. He'll be hoping to be back into that. So a difficult one for him, but like I said, quite good to have him back in the league, given he's one of our top talents.
Yeah, I think the 6 month deal, as you said, will probably be a chance for him to try and get the move that he maybe wanted. Obviously, it's difficult for a lot of players that were running down their contracts in leagues such as Scotland, given coronavirus, the financial situation at clubs across the world. But I think maybe where he was looking to go, which was, you know, down south to maybe Championship, top of League One. Obviously, clubs down there are having to kind of watch what they're doing in terms of their finances, and there hasn't been a massive amount of movement in that market so far. So I can understand why he maybe waited until he did. And I think the expectation from a lot of people was that he would move down south or maybe, you know, abroad to, I don't want to disrespect Kilmarnock here, but, you know, maybe to a higher level of football. But he's ended up at Motherwell, who obviously did finish above Kilmarnock last season. And I thought he looked pretty good. As you say, though, he'll be looking to play his way back into the Scotland squad. As I say, I did find that a bit surprising, though, that Motherwell maybe didn't try and sign him on to just until the end of the season. But then I suppose in the moment with coronavirus, you know, who knows where we're going to be at come January, especially in terms of the transfer market and things like that. So, yeah, I thought he did well. I thought Motherwell, as you say, improved. Alan Campbell was very good for me as well. So, as I say, probably a bit of a launching pad for Motherwell this game. And considering, as Gamba said, the start the Hibs have had, it's a very solid result.
I don't think there's anything really else to add to this game, so we could probably just move on. Fisher, where would you like to go next?
Why don't we go to Hamilton versus St Mirren?
Oh, so you're keeping it in line. I like it. You know, it's not like we're just jumping to Sunday. So
I'm trying. No, well, if I can put off talking about that game yesterday for as long as possible, that would be great.
That game. Okay, Hamilton versus St Mirren. A fine victory for St Mirren. That's two wins now, two 1-0 wins to start their season. Goal was a bit of a scramble from Obika, but a very good win for them. Gamba?
Yeah, absolutely. And I know that former Burst boss on Ross Clark saying that they're going to finish top six, and of course they're above Celtic now, so they are top six. I know that a lot of us at the start of the season were going like, okay, St Mirren are probably going to be looking to avoid relegation and go from there. Apart from, if you're Tony Fitzpatrick, you're looking for Champions League spots. But, you know, these are the games, if you're looking to avoid a relegation scrap, you need to pick up points, and they've done three. So it's a cracking result for St Mirren. Again, Hamilton, I know everyone's kind of, I saw a lot of people writing them off and going like, hi, this is it. They're done. They're finished. They're down. Can't say that just now. As I said on that preview podcast, there are forces greater than all of us keeping Hamilton in this league, so you cannot write them off after losing to this game at all. But no, I mean, sorry, we're talking about St Mirren. They did good. They really did well, and I know that certainly the defence keeping the clean sheet is your kind of major one. Going from home, if you're going up against someone that you might be involved in a relegation scrap with, if you limit them to fuck all, then you're basically laughing. You get their goal, scrappy circumstances, you take that. It's a brilliant result. And I know that it's an interesting one, St Mirren, because I do remember looking at the start of the season and thinking that, like, I don't see them having a particularly eventful season this year. And if they do get a lot of these kind of results out of the way to begin the season with, they'll definitely be safe. Whether they'll get top six, I do think it is just beyond them, and I still think it's too early to kind of tell these things. But these kind of results, they'll be in with a shout. If they keep getting these results against the teams that are going to be at the bottom, your Hamilton's basically, then I think they should be fine going forward.
Yeah, at the back as well, Jack Anik having another good game. Fisher, you were full of praise of him last week. I think you were saying about he kind of kept it from being a bit of a rout at Ibrox. Mm-hmm. So and as a former Rangers keeper, you have seen a little bit of him. So That'll be really positive, though, won't it, for Jim Goodwin, given the fact that they obviously lost I feel like I'm Derek Ferguson from Haladke, yeah. It's like Derek Ferguson on Saturday, can I pronounce the subs? Very good bit of business there for a Goodwin side, yeah, Fisher.
Yeah, at the time when it happened, I was a little bit surprised. I thought he would maybe go back down south, but he's been absolutely superb for St Mirren. He makes a really good save early on. Tempo nets a free kick and it kind of comes back, and he makes a superb save, and he's been a superb signing for St Mirren. And as I say, there was a couple of good saves from Anik in that game, and I think the back four as well at St Mirren, they looked really settled. They've played really well. I mean, obviously, St Mirren have only had three games. They were meant to play Celtic at home, obviously, last week. But if you take the game away at Ibrox, and, you know, you can, I think for a lot of teams in the league, particularly in St Mirren's kind of situation, you can maybe discount the games against the Old Firm. But they've won at home to Livingston 1-0, and obviously they've won yesterday 1-0. So they've kept clean sheets, and they've beaten teams that you would have said last season that, you know, that they would need to beat to survive. And they're pushing on really well. Obviously, they've got County, St Johnston, County at home, St Johnston away in the next 2 weeks. So that's games that they'll fancy as well. I thought, though, I mean, Hamilton could probably consider themselves unlucky not to take something from the game. But then, in the same token, I mean, in that first half, St Mirren could have been 3 or 4 ahead. And it's just another good win for St Mirren. The only thing I would say, though, is against maybe the better teams in the league, they could possibly find themselves caught out, because if you don't capitalise on those chances against, you know, Motherwell, Hibs, certainly Dundee United, even Ross County, who have made a good start to the season, then they might not get away with it. But a good win for St Mirren, and as I said, really, really impressed with Jack Anick and with our business this summer. They brought in some really good players, and even obviously Obika, who was there last season, I thought was excellent as well. So all round, just a really good performance, I thought, from St Mirren. But Hamilton again showing that we can't really just write them off as much as I think we all have done already. Hamilton have still got a decent squad there, and could have taken something, but St Mirren were very good, I thought.
Yeah, just on Hamilton there before we wrap up this game. Brian Rice feeling a bit, well, he said he's very concerned by the result. Obviously, that's 3 defeats on the spin. They've not played that. The game against Aberdeen was called off, but the 2 games that they obviously have lost, especially this one, they'd have been looking at that, as you said, just as a setting to go on St Mirren, Gamba, that these are the kind of games that they do need to be winning. Aye. Now, Aki's, for all their critics and all, they always find their ways to kind of get results, but difficult start for them, isn't it?
Aye, this might sound quite bad. Brian Rice said something quite worrying, and I remember it, when Celtic managers say this, and kind of in the other way, I always kind of think in a bad way. He said, "We're really unlucky, and if we keep doing this, the goals will come." And I know that's always. I remember Tony Mowbray used to kind of say that when he was Celtic managers, that we're going to give somebody a doing these days, and it's like, "Ah, but we should be doing it already." Like, you know, we should be kind of getting these results. I know there's not been that many results there, and as I've said, I believe in the supernatural fully when it comes to Hamilton, but. it will be a wee bit worrying, considering they haven't picked up any points and they're drawn level with a team that's only played 1 game this season. That obviously will start to ring alarm bells, but again, who they're taking a wee look here, who they're kind of upcoming games that they've got. Motherwell, it's Motherwell next, isn't it? And then Rangers.
Yeah.
Lanarkshire Derby, you know. Form goes out the window. No, it doesn't. I'm worried for them. Aye. You'd be looking into September before you're saying that they've actually got a very, very good chance of picking up points in these games. You could be looking at September time. Bit worrying.
Difficult start for Hamilton, obviously, and like I said, it's hard to just kind of the bottom of the table, just to kind of string, like, 2 wins can be crucial, but at the moment, you know, there's every chance they could be getting cut adrift.
That was the thing I was looking at with
St Mirren. Aberdeen don't play, sorry.
No, the thing I was looking at with St Mirren is, like, they've got 2 wins. That's already, like, a third of the amount of wins they had last season, because we're talking about the reason Hearts got relegated is because they won 4 games all season. Like, St Mirren have already got half that. Like, you know, they're only 3 games into the season. You know, it's one of those ones. If you're picking up these wins early on, it's going to make life a lot easier later on. So, yeah,
excellent. Well, very good win for St Mirren. We'll head to the Highlands now, to Dingwall. A bit of a cracking game, I thought. This, just judging by the sports scene highlights, and one of my friends was watching it. Dundee United 2. Well, Ross County 1. Dundee United 2. Terrific win for Dundee United, Fisher.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think County will be disappointed, as I think they probably had enough chances to win the game. But United showing that they're very much a solid addition to the top flight, and they're going to be difficult for anyone to kind of to take points from, and they're certainly a match for anyone. I mean, early on, I thought County looked really good. Some nice movement led to kind of Payton's penalty appeal, and then a lovely, obviously, move, resulting in the kind of cushion down to Donaldson for County's first. But yeah, United came back strong. I think Stuart Kettlewell was really frustrated, because he said, I think up until 45 minutes, they were kind of spot on, which was true. And then obviously the kind of Dundee United equaliser comes, and certainly in the second half, Dundee United came back into it. But a really good result for Dundee United, who have made a pretty good start to the season. I did think that they would come up and they would be, I didn't think they would kind of be languishing right from the off. I thought they'd be very competitive, and they've certainly showed that so far.
Yeah, and Gamba, like, no Shanklin, no problem for Dundee United. That's Nicky Clark now and a couple of goals. Peter Pollock getting back in goals, I think it's the first time in a year he's scored. A player he's probably been thinking, like, he's probably done. But just on Clark, though, really good start to season for him. And, you know, when Shanklin, if he does come back into this team, you know, they're going to have potentially an issue.
I hope Shanklin's going to get in the team. I know we'll come on it later. I've got him as my captain in the fantasy team, and he's not been playing for me.
He's in my team as well.
But no,
so is Lyndon Dykes as well. So I've got an issue.
But no, it's another good result, and again, it's the goals coming from, you know, guys that we know are class. Like Peter Pollock and Nicky Clark are, you know, two, you know, good players. Man, it's good to see them, you know, in the top flight in Scotland doing their thing. I mean, again, it will be interesting when Shanklin's back in the team, how you can fit them in and work with it. I don't know whether it could be a difference in terms of playing away from home and playing at home, because I think that's what they've won at Motherwell, they've won here, and they've picked up, what, 1 point from their home games now, haven't they? So it might be something that they would maybe have a different style of playing away from home to at home, which is, I know it's a bit weird considering that the only difference is literally how you're travelling on the bus, like the distance you're going. Rather than actually playing in front of crowds and things like that, it will be interesting to see how they work it. But I think it was kind of similar to the Kilmarnock game in a sense, where I thought they did kind of weather a storm, and then once they kind of got over that, they were then able to kind of push and go on and get the eventual win, obviously in a very different manner to the St Johnstone game. But they did do really well to weather that. Your man Stuart probably should have had a hat trick. I think I would be disappointed if it was Ross County or of a Ross County persuasion looking at this. I think that they probably should have buried that beforehand.
I'd put one over the bar from close range as well.
But again, I suppose it's how you look at it. It's one of these ones where Dundee United is a case of, okay, well, we managed to weather that, let's go and get something. Whereas Ross County, you're looking at it and going, like, this game should be dead. Like, how has this happened? It's an interesting one from Ross County point of view, but then again, they could have been pushing right up with Rangers and Hibs at the top of the league if they'd actually gotten something here, which, you know, they'll probably be kicking themselves over.
Yeah, Mickey Mellon Fisher just kind of seems to be building this kind of mentality that Dundee United should be, you know, they should be going to places and winning. They should be in the top six. You know, he's touched on this week about the historical aspect of United, how they're obviously one of Scotland's bigger clubs, and really kind of building that. Do you think that makes a difference in the players to kind of really go, look, you should be up here, you know, like, regardless of the fact you're a team at the championship, a bit like Hibs when they came back up, you know, that kind of, you know, prove the doubters wrong and be one of the big clubs?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Dundee United, whatever you think of them, they are one of the bigger clubs in the country. And maybe it has just been because they've been away, if you like, for a couple of years, that maybe people have forgotten that. I'm sure their own supporters certainly haven't forgotten that, but, you know, it's been a while since we've been used to Dundee United kind of pushing into the top six, and even going for Europe, obviously, as they did kind of 10 or so years ago. So I think that's a good mentality to have. I mean, with all due respect, I mean, Dundee United should be going to places like Ross County and winning, and there's plenty of clubs there that, just in terms of stature, Dundee United should be beating. Obviously, it doesn't come down to stature, that would be ridiculous, but, you know, Dundee United should always be a team that is striving for minimum top six, if not trying to get in there with third, particularly if you've now got, obviously, Hearts in a lower division. It kind of opens up a bit of a gap for another club to try and come in and compete for that top six spot. Obviously, Hearts didn't last season, but, you know, historically, you know, Hearts are always up in the top six as well. So, yeah, I totally agree with that mentality. I think he was very, very happy as well that he mentioned kind of youth prospects, academy players coming into the first team and getting their debuts and things like that. And I know, obviously, he's on loan from Man City, so he's not a youth graduate, but Luke Bolton really impressed me again for Dundee United. I've seen him two or three times now, and he's always been really good. He's very direct with the ball. And he makes things happen. He's directly involved with the United equaliser, and he's unlucky, obviously, not to score in the second half as well. So he's really stood out for me. But yeah, just kind of rounding off what you were saying there, Matt, I think it's absolutely right that Dundee United come up with that mentality, because if you come up with a mentality that you're just there to make up the numbers, then very often you'll find that, you know, it is a real scrap, and Dundee United as a bigger club should be aiming for more than that. And as I say, they've been a real good addition to the top flight so far.
Yeah. Well, we'll move on to Sunday now. Fisher, back to you, I assume. You've obviously watched and been able to kind of dissect the last 24 hours from a Rangers point of view. That game wasn't great for Rangers. Obviously created a lot again, but just couldn't put the ball in the net. And credit to Livingston, obviously we'll come on to them as well.
Yeah, well, I had an absolutely brilliant weekend up until the end of that game. Well, I say the entirety of that game. I kind of said last night on Twitter and in discussions with a few people, I mean, we've seen that game so many times from Rangers under Steven Gerrard. I don't get... It doesn't... He is learning as a manager, and it would be unfair for me to say that he hasn't, because he has done... If you discount the fact that we've not won anything in terms of Europe, and he's obviously made us a lot better domestically, but there's just always these games in these seasons whereby Livingston or whoever it is just sit, and that's all Livingston did. And this isn't me having a go at them for that, because this isn't how they play out with against ourselves and probably Celtic when they play them. But they sat with everyone behind the ball, tried to frustrate us, and it worked. And we can't seem to figure out how to get through these teams. Obviously at Ibrox more often than not that we do, and we actually have a pretty good record up at Almondvale, apart from the first game of Gerrard's first season there where they beat us 1-0. Just so disappointing. I mean, you can go through the team. Jack was off it, Kamara was off it, Hadji was woeful, by far the worst player on the park. Morelos didn't do much. Arfield came in for Aribo, who was a big miss, and didn't do anything. I mean, the only kind of positive was that we kept another clean sheet. McLaughlin had next to nothing to do. I think Scott Robinson's had a chance kind of late on, and actually, to be fair, Sibbald's had a goal from about 45 yards out as well, and nearly put the ball over him. But it's just really disappointing, because every time we seem to get the opportunity, and this is obviously completely different circumstances to what we've had before, but any time we seem to have the opportunity to put the pressure into Celtic or turn the screw, we can't seem to do it, and I don't know why. I don't know why we have to persist with two holding midfielders and Kamara and Jack when we're playing Livingston away. There's just such a lack of creativity. I mean, I was kind of slightly rough yesterday, so I had a few beers to kind of tide me over, and the bottles were close to going through the telly with the amount of times Jack or Kamara got the ball, looked in front of them, and then just passed it sideways again. And there's just no real dynamism in that midfield too at the moment. I think Aribo probably could have played if it wasn't for the surface, because he had an ankle knock. But yeah, just bitterly disappointing. But fair play to Livingston. I mean, they did their job. They were in our faces. They sat back and they made it difficult. And to be honest, that's what you should expect. And that's what we have seen previously, and we've managed to deal with it in terms of Livingston specifically. But there's just so many games under Gerrard now whereby we just can't break teams down, and it costs us points, and these are the games that will cost us in the long run, because we've shown that we're good enough to go to Pittodrie, or we're good enough to go to Parkhead or Easter Road and win these games, and we can beat pretty much anyone at Ibrox as well. But these are the games that trip us up, and it's just so bitterly disappointing, and it's certainly something that is a cause of concern, because although people will say it's only four games into the season, well, we're now three seasons in, and obviously he didn't get a full second season, but we're now into Gerrard's third season, and we're saying the same things over and over again, and it's bitterly disappointing, and it's absolutely a cause for concern.
Yeah, and Gamba, just on Livingston, I mean, well, Fisher touched on it there, that, you know, that they have in the past frustrated Rangers at Almondvale, and they kind of proved again today yesterday that it can be a tougher place to go, you know, for these bigger clubs. I mean, they obviously in the opening day got hammering off of Hibs, but bar that, sorry, not the opening, the second game, but bar, you know, I thought that they were kind of, because if you look at it defensively, they're obviously good value for their point.
Aye, 100%. I mean, as Callum was saying there, they set out with a game plan, and if they got a goal, happy days. If they don't, I don't think they were particularly disappointed with that. It's, I think it's exactly what they kind of set out to do. What, they had the ball, what was it even 20% of the time?
I'm not I even think sure. Rangers had over 70% possession, I think Rangers had.
I think they were quite happy for Rangers to have the ball. And it was quite interesting, because I didn't actually catch the full game. I did catch quite a bit of the second half and the kind of end of the first half. And going by what I saw there, and also by the highlights, there did seem to be, I mean, the word creativity, but I mean, initially when I was trying to make the point to who I was watching with, I did say, there's just nae football in that Rangers team. Like, what is going on here? Because Hadji was terrible. And I think when Livi were looking at that, they're probably going, okay, they're going to be hitting shots or, you know, from distance, and this seems fairly comfortable. I mean, until the end, obviously, when it gets to squeaky bum time, they're actually doing okay until there's that kind of free kick that the goalie has to obviously make a great save with. But Livi, I saw the stat that since the start of the season 18-19, Livi have picked up 10 points against the Old Firm. Only Killie have got a better record in that time. Mm. It was 15 points they've picked up in that time. Obviously they've taken wins against both Celtic and Rangers. They've picked up draws, and I remember the kind of one of the final games of last season, Celtic getting a draw there, and it was, you know, people were on the park, I'm sure. I remember it was obviously more to do with results elsewhere, but it was a very, very good point that we were looking at that. So it's an interesting one, because I can totally understand where Callum's coming from, but it might be something towards the end of the season where if other teams are going there and struggling that much, that could be a good point come the end of the season. We don't know. It's an interesting one.
Gamba, just on kind of Rangers at the moment, obviously Celtic haven't been playing.
Aye.
In the last week, really. They will return next weekend.
Hopefully.
but does it kind of concern you a wee bit, the fact that Rangers can potentially open up gaps on, you know, does that obviously add more pressure to Celtic when it comes to chasing? I say Rangers, I mean, obviously other teams too, but like, yeah, is it a bit of a concern?
100%. You want to be playing games. You want to have points on the board. And I think last season that did okay for Celtic. It was very weird last season, Celtic having that random midweek game against Hearts that gave them that 3-point advantage throughout most of the season. I think that did help somewhat. And I think the fact that they've missed two games now, and Rangers will have this two-game gap over Celtic for the majority of the season if their games don't get suspended, I think that will prove to be an advantage throughout the season. No, it is something which does worry me. I've no problems saying that. It's very, very worrying for me. It looks as if the SFA are going to go after individuals, but I thought those games were going to get awarded 3-0 victories initially. So I'm pleased Celtic will, it does appear at the moment they'll get to play those games. But when they'll get to play those games and in what condition they'll get to play those games are worrying to me.
Yeah, I saw something about Aberdeen. Aberdeen don't have a free midweek now until till the end of the calendar year. So it'll probably be the same for Celtic. Obviously, aye, they've got European games as well to factor. Well, Aberdeen will do too, but
yeah.
it could be quite interesting, because like you obviously want these players playing well. This is kind of properly, I think, where you need to kind of utilise your squads. And I touched on it the other week on the pod with the boys, and I'm just speaking to, I think it was Hamish, I was just saying, like, there doesn't seem to be a lot of depth in that Celtic squad, like, kind of at the moment. You know, like, I mean, I'm sure it will. They'll have a lot. They'll lose a left back,
I think, quite immediately. So that's an immediate problem. I don't want to see Callum McGregor filling in there ever again. There's chat today that Ncham's going to be going. Now, he's a guy that, well, that if he stays at the club, will be getting used in rotation. I think he should be starting every game. It's an interesting one, but maybe there's more of a need to sell. But then again, do we need to sell? Or are we buying the right players? It looks as if we're in for yet another striker. I don't know. It's a strange one. It's possibly. I mean, he might go, but who knows? It is a weird one to see. There's guys on the bench that definitely can do a job, and Cham's on the bench, as I was saying. I think he should probably be playing. The real problem, centre back. What happens if one of those guys gets injured? Then no idea. And Ayer is notoriously made of glass, so it will happen. There will come a point, and then they'll probably have to play El Hamid at centre back, who's also made of glass. It's It is going to be difficult. It is right to kind of pick up on that there is going to be problems when it comes to the squad, and there's guys that are supposed to be filling in that squad who are notoriously injury prone. I was very angry with Bolly, not just because the games are suspended, but because of the clusterfuck it's caused afterwards, I think.
Mm. Yeah, well, just on that point that Gamba made, just from a Rangers perspective, certainly in terms of the squads as well, I mean, we're looking at McCrory, Doherty, Murphy all heading out the door. Obviously, who the hell knows what's going to happen with Morelos. And we are bringing on Brandon Barker to try and win his football game. So I would probably suggest that I think there might be a bit of movement on that in the Rangers side as well, because obviously Itton and Roof still need to get up to speed. I thought Itton looked actually okay when he came on. Roof certainly looks like somebody that hasn't played much football this year, which is the case. And as I say, you've still got guys like Jordan Jones, Greg Stewart there. So whilst Rangers do have a squad, it's kind of clear that Gerrard doesn't trust half of them. So we certainly need to try and get our finger out and get some more quality in, as well as shifting some of the... I don't want to call guys like McCrory and Murphy and Doherty deadwood, because obviously they have talent, but in terms of this current situation, they're not going to get played. So that is probably an accurate term for them. But yeah, certainly on the squads, I think for Rangers and Celtic, it's probably an issue that needs to be addressed fairly quickly.
Yeah, well, Celtic obviously are in action. They do return European football this week, playing Reykjavik. Home leg, Gamba, just quickly on this game. The new setup with the European games, obviously one-legged shootout. What's your take on that? And is it an advantage to Celtic? Is it an advantage to Reykjavik? Like, who the hell knows? Because they've obviously not really been making a big difference in the European games that we've seen so far.
I don't know. I think because there's that lack of second leg, it's probably an advantage to Reykjavik. That's not to say I think they have the advantage here. I think Celtic should be wiping the floor with them. If they don't, it's going to be an absolute embarrassment. Then again, we've really, really struggled to break down Kilmarnock, and I'd imagine Reykjavik are going to play something similar. So hopefully they've been spending their time off wisely to try and learn how to do this. The one-off European games, I think, have been certainly quite interesting. The games in Portugal and Germany, it's been quite weird, I think, because you're usually used to, if Lyon had gotten a 3-1-1 against Man City, you're looking at the second leg and going... Still time to turn it around, though, isn't there? It'll be interesting to see how it works with the qualifiers, because there's usually shocks that are thrown up there, even over the two legs, because the start of the season is coming in. Whether there'll be more of them, because there isn't that opportunity for the bigger seeds maybe to kind of turn things around in a second leg. It will be interesting to see certainly from a neutral point of view, it will be. I hope it's not when it comes to Celtic. But then again, I'm saying it'll be interesting to see whether there's scalps taken because of the new format, but the Champions League's such a closed shop. Even if there are scalps taken, none of these teams are going to get into the group stages. They've already got all the teams they want in the group stage, so they'll be fine, I think.
Yeah, well, obviously, a big incentive this year for Scottish clubs is that there's going to be two Champions League places awarded, so that could be interesting going forward. The other clubs don't appear in Europe until the following week. I think it's the 26th. Aberdeen will find out who they're playing on if they're having to host Barry from Wales. They play on Thursday, Barry Island. Just in terms of we'll just jump on to Aberdeen now. A game on Thursday against St Johnston, as it stands, goes ahead. I mean, there's so much uncertainty just now up in Aberdeen. Like, you can't even get into the city, let alone bring folk up from Perth. So I'm sure it'll go ahead. The Hateful Eight, as they've been branded, the Soul Eight, they apparently returned to training this week, sorry, today. So there's a lot of speculation, obviously, doing the rounds on various Aberdeen forums. Forums are speak shite. I don't listen to them, but there are obviously a few bits and bobs going on at Aberdeen. I think just briefly on this, Fisher Aberdeen will be looking to get the result and hopefully get back to some sort of normality.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, obviously, it says a lot that Aberdeen have missed, a decent amount of fixtures and still aren't bottom. But, yeah, I mean, obviously, after a defeat, particularly in a kind of big game against Rangers, for any kind of team, it's the kind of game that you want to just, you want a game quickly after so that you can get it out of the system. And obviously for that, that's kind of been forgotten about in the sense of everything else that's been going on. So yeah, absolutely, I think Aberdeen will just be desperate to play. What kind of state they're in, I don't think anybody can really know at this stage. St Johnston, I imagine, will probably fancy their chances, particularly on the back of that prior discussed win at Rugby Park. So it'll be interesting to see. But obviously, just in terms for the season as a whole, I just hope the game goes ahead and we can, this was the bump in the road, and we can all kind of move on, and we don't really have to fear that football, what was it, gets the red card, as Nicola Sturgeon said last week. So yeah, hopefully this is kind of us, or you know, football putting the incident behind it, all the players kind of screwing the nut, and we can just get on with talking about the game, and hopefully looking forward to getting back into stadiums as soon as possible.
So I mean, we'll obviously be able to talk about those two games later on in the week when we're looking at the weekend coming up. Hopefully positive results for the Scottish sides in Europe, as I meant to say, as an impartial host. And obviously from my point of view, I hope Aberdeen do get back to winning ways, or just ways, just actually playing a game, which would be quite nice.
That'd be nice.
We'll jump on to the fantasy. We'll jump on to the fantasy football just now. Obviously the Burst Ball League, 700 odd people signed up for it this season. Phenomenal turnout, to be honest. I'm not in the top three, which I'm about to read out. I had a fairly difficult week, thankfully. Borna Barisic saved it with a captain's clean sheet. But leading the way in the Burst Ball, the Big Burst Ball League, is a team called We Are William Gross with 43 points for the week. So he's top of the table. I think he's still remaining top of the table.
Yeah, he is.
Yeah, because I looked at the wee app and it didn't have any movement. And then in second place on 265 points, Lachlan Higgett. Don't know, is that a person? Is that an organisation? I don't know. Is that a team?
Lachlan Higgett is We Are All William Gross. Second is Garden.
Right, oh, yeah. Sorry, that's what I'm. I've misread that. Second is Garden Shed Sports. So I don't think that's a person, but more of a shop or some sort.
A consortium.
Something like that. All clubbing together. Too many cooks in the kitchen, though, if you're having a few players running a fantasy team. He's second, so apologies there to Lachlan. Messed up my notes there. And rounding off the top three is Marcos. So, lads, how did you both get on in the fantasy league this week?
An absolute disaster. 15 points. It's the worst showing ever. I mean, I think I've probably got as many points as Ryan Crombie's got for the full thing with that score there. But yeah, not great. Not great, to be honest.
Crombie hasn't had a good start. So in that level is difficult.
I think I'm just above him in the table, to be honest. I'm not good this week.
I had an okay week. I didn't have quite as good a week as I did the week before, but I've moved up to 87th place, the lofty heights of 87th place in the Big Burst Ball League, and I'm currently winning our kind of private Burst Ball League by about 33 points, so it's not been too bad. Barisic kind of pulled me out of a hole, as he very much almost did Rangers on Sunday, with his, he's my captain as well, so yeah, not too bad, but could be better.
Yeah, Barisic for me kind of helped him. I made him at last. I had a look at my team, and Ryan Christie is normally my captain. I went, well, obviously, I kind of put him in. I think Lyndon Dykes is my vice captain, so I knew he was obviously on the way out, so I'll have to kind of reshuffle there. But an okay week, thanks to Big Borna. But we go again, as I say, in early days in the league. We've got a couple of questions. I'll ask it just from the two folk today. Adam's a Killy fan, and he is saying, Fisher, I'll come to you on this. What creative midfielder, realistically, can Killy sign? Because we definitely need one.
Yeah,
it's a cry for help almost.
Yeah, I can completely understand that position of thinking. it's difficult. I mean, so, some of their business has been okay. Obviously, Tishbola coming back and has been good. I mean, I'm surprised actually that nobody's really gone for Andy Irving at Hearts. I kind of talked him up on a podcast we did a few weeks ago, myself, Hamish and Craig, when we were searching for any Hearts player to make it into the 11 of the season, and I went for Andy Irving, who's obviously still young, but was kind of one of the very few positives for Hearts last season. I think he's a good kind of creative player, so possibly one to look at there. I mean, it's tough for, as I kind of mentioned earlier, I mean, the transfer market is so weird at the moment. It's difficult to not only find value but find any kind of movement. Obviously, from our own team's perspective, the Morelos thing's dragging on forever, and that's kind of dependent on about 3-4 other different transfers down the line. So that's how it's kind of working at the moment, in the midst of obviously a global pandemic. But certainly Andy Irving, in my perspective, not just for Kilmarnock, for kind of the majority of the top flight teams would certainly be one to look at.
Yeah, and Gamba, just a question. We've kind of talked about it earlier on, but this is from Grant Campbell. He's saying, have St Mirren exceeded expectations? Now, I know we obviously touched on them a little bit earlier on, but just briefly, kind of, well, have they?
Probably so far, aye. I think if you'd had them top six already, I know it's a wee bit of a strange one because quite a few clubs have had to suspend quite a few games, but I mean, as I said earlier on, they've already got a third of the amount of wins they had last season, so I'd say so far. Although, as I said, if you're Tony Fitzpatrick, you're probably a wee bit disappointed.
Yeah, that just about wraps up for us. Just got a little bit of any other business that you put down in meetings. That's what I've done for today. It's ongoing at the moment, but there's strong rumours that Aaron Hickey signed a 5-year deal at Bayern Munich. Just a quick second on that. Big move if it does go ahead. Can I maybe shades of Ryan Gold though? Perhaps a young player, Gordon Fisher, that you hope he obviously goes and does well. But I don't really know if he's going to be getting in at left back at Bayern Munich anytime soon.
No, not certainly not with the kind of performances Alphonso Davies is putting in at the moment. I kind of touched on this a couple of podcasts ago. I think Germany is a really, really good option for young British players that are looking to develop, even if they aren't going to be starting, obviously, or playing in the first team. Like, it's almost certain that Aaron Hickey won't do it Bayern, certainly not anytime soon. But as I say, obviously, Sancho's a big one, but you've got Ampadu, Matondo, Jonjo Kenny, Ademola Lookman. There's so many British players going over there, and whether they're maybe not playing every game, they're getting a different kind of football education that you certainly won't get, not just in Scotland but in the UK, and they're developing their game and against probably what you would term at the moment kind of the best league in the world in terms of quality, with some of the best coaches and best managers. So best of luck to him if he does it. It must be an absolute dream move. I'm not sure how I would have coped with moving with Bayern Munich at any age, let alone before I was even 21 years old. So now, best of luck for him, and hopefully, obviously, he develops into an absolute world-class left-back for Scotland's sake.
Yeah, and Gamba, just on, it'd be rude not to mention it, Moussa Dembele knocking out Man City in the Champions League. From a former Celtic point of view, first off, you'll be delighted, but also, does that kind of maybe show that like, we've talked on it, and it gets discussed quite a lot, but Scottish kind of players obviously been taken quite seriously now. Well, he's obviously not Scottish, but coming from the Scottish Premiership, been taken quite seriously now that maybe these bigger clubs can be taking a chance on them, as proven.
Aye, hopefully. I know Chris Sutton was kind of at the wind up the other night going on about getting players from Scotland. But I mean, there's a grain of a decent point in there, that rather than having to do the jump from going to Celtic or whatever down to Southampton and then to kind of these elite clubs, go to the level above that. Maybe go to your kind of second tier European clubs, your kind of, you know, your teams like Lyon, you know, the teams that are going to be in the Champions League and are going to be looking at the last 16 quarterfinals, eyeing up a semi-final rather than taking one stepping stone to another. Because, I mean, the amount of guys that are down there that have done it in the Scottish Premiership and on the continent, certainly with Dembele, that have done it in the Premiership. I mean, the fact Denier was in that team as well the other night, you know, kind of shows you that he was a guy that did not too bad up in Scotland as well. So, no, it's... You'd like to think it would give bigger teams more faith just to spend money in Scotland, because God knows we need it.
Yeah, definitely. Well, that just about does it, lads. Just like to say thanks very much for listening to my hosting shite. Hope it's been all right. Fisher, thank you very much for joining us today.
Always a pleasure.
And Gamba, great to have you back on, and hopefully speak to you soon as well.
Yeah, great to be here, Matt. It was a pleasure speaking to you, pal.
Yeah. And thank you again for the listeners just tuning in today. Get us on all our usual channels. Obviously, the podcast will be up hopefully tonight. Hamish is editing. He's taking the evening off from hosting, but he is going to be editing this together. No technical issues, but that's why I better finish off just now. But thanks very much, and we'll catch you all later on in the week.